you're listening to the Swiss Info Programme for the 6th of June. I'm Jo Fay. The Swiss Shortwave Service and Swiss Radio International broadcast as an independent voice from the heart of Europe throughout the Second World War, the Cold War, and up to 2004. So how did the little country with the loud voice present Switzerland to the world? A team's going through the International Services archives, and they found some absolute gems.
It's 31 minutes past one on a very fine and bright, sunny February afternoon. And we're bobsledding from Breda to Bergoon, 5 kilometres. Welcome aboard. Hooray!
Music also played a major part of Swiss Radio International's broadcasting. Did you know the station made sought-after records that were sent out to stations in far-flung destinations, with everything from yodeling to jazz and folk songs? We'll find out where they went and why people on the other side of the planet wanted Swiss mixtapes on vinyl.
Swiss Radio International, Europe.
Schweizer Radio International, Europa.
Radio Suisse Internationale, Europe.
Radio Svizzera Internazionale, Europa.
May I add this final thought? In this week of Thanksgiving, there is much for which we can be grateful. As we look back to where we stood only 4 weeks ago, the unity of this hemisphere, the support of our allies, and the calm determination of the American people.
Getting impartial information during the Cold War years and hearing news from around the world, such as John F. Kennedy talking there about the Cuban Missile Crisis, was key to the listeners and was at the heart of the radio station's mission during this era.
They always said, especially in the Cold War, we are neutral. That was also why the listeners listened to Swiss Radio International, because they believed that it was a neutral voice.
Fanny Gutscher's talking to me while she rifles through piles of papers on her desk at the University of Basel. She's one of numerous researchers trawling through letters, production notes, memos and audio in the Swiss Radio International archives.
So we're in your office now, and this is where most of your research goes on, I guess.
And this is just a print of documents from the archives that I scanned or photographed, and I separate them to different decades.
So you've got the 1930s going all the way up to in the year 2000 and onwards.
Yeah.
So is this everything that you've looked at, or is this just a selection?
This is a selection of what is in the archives. This is just documents about reception or about how the radio station conceptualised the programme.
The task is to see how Swissness was projected to far-flung countries and how the listeners reacted.
But there's much more in the archives. As you see, it goes a little bit, the number of papers for each decade go up until the 1980s.
Why is that?
Yeah, I think because it was the size of the institution was biggest from the 1950s to the 1980s. And then after the fall of the wall or the end of the Cold War, like every country was somehow democratic, more or less. I think that is one reason why the activities go down a little bit. And then also because they had not so much money anymore.
Gutscher looks through the information and then refers to audio files when they're referenced and when they actually exist. Not everything was archived. An unusual episode in the station's history developed in 1968, the year of the Prague Spring, when the Soviet Red Army crushed a Czechoslovakian revolt.
So they were thinking of establishing a Czech service, and they were doing some research about would it be useful and would we be successful with that.
She's referring to an internal memo from 1968. A few news programmes were broadcast, but they were a short-lived reaction to this political event and didn't continue for long. A few topics from a typical broadcast included the Red Cross, the Postal Service, and asylum policy in Switzerland. The memo notes that programming for a Czech audience was to avoid being political. The station received thousands of letters every year, but reaction to the short-lived Czech experiment was slim.
mainly due to censorship in the country, Gutsche believes, based on this archive material.
They got one that was opened by a censor in the Czech Republic, but then still was sent to the radio station. And I think that is the only reaction they got.
There could well have been more letters that didn't make it past the censors. There are other documents in the archives that divulge a sense of the times.
They didn't have any service in Russian, for example, like other international services had. That was interesting because I expected they would have this because they said they are a neutral country and they want to bring neutral information, so why not in Russian? I found in the archives that there was a discussion of establishing a service in Russian or other Slavic languages, but then it was denied from the government. It was said that, but we already have Radio Free Europe and other international radio stations that broadcast to the East, so we don't have to do that. I don't know why, but I wasn't really convinced. I also had the feeling it was more important to them to be heard in the West. That was also something that doesn't really reflect neutrality, I think. So this history, you can feel this history.
In contrast to the temporary delve into the Czech broadcasting, the connection between the station and its listeners worldwide was generally strong. Part of the service's aim was to maintain unity among the Swiss, wherever they were. Letters came in, many filled with emotion. Gutsche showed me some examples of the correspondence the radio station received.
They're both from the USA, but one is in German, one is in English.
So this person was saying, when I hear this sort of specific Swiss music, it still brings tears to my eyes, yes. Even though I've been away for over 50 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, the program on August 15 from Lausanne was the best I ever received. Very strong and clear, no noise. Also, I wish thank you for the beautiful yodel, also for the rest of the music.
Commenting more on the kind of quality of the broadcast there.
Yeah, really, really often I read about that Swiss people who live abroad, sometimes since 10, 20, 30, 40 years, that even if they totally are adapted in their new home and have kids there and everything, they still become very emotional when they listen to the broadcast from Swiss Radio International made for Swiss people abroad.
The Swiss listeners dotted around the world were keen to take part in activities that could bring them closer to the perfect image of Switzerland. Swiss Radio International set up a global event in the late 1930s that allowed them to do exactly that.
The producers thought of something that the listeners could do where they were to kind of keep in touch with Switzerland. And so they invented something called Radio Weltschützenfest.
The radio's worldwide shooting festival was a global competition set up by the station that ran seven times up into the 1960s. Target shooting with rifles is a part of Swiss military training, and competitions also run throughout the country for those with an interest and an eye for detail. Being able to defend yourself with a rifle could also be seen as a part of this concept of Swissness, according to the researchers.
Switzerland was also surrounded by very strong countries who were dictatorships, and so they wanted to present that they are also a strong country and can defend themselves.
From its roots in this idea in the 1930s, the competition was also something very Swiss, and with a long tradition behind it. The Swiss legend of William Tell stems from his ability to shoot an apple off his son's head when challenged by an oppressor. Of course, this was with a bow and arrow, not a rifle.
Everybody could take part in the contests, and then they sent the results to Bern, to the studio, and then they chose a winner of the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how many countries were taking part in that, do you know?
Oh, roughly, I would say maybe 20 to 30.
The Swiss communities abroad also stayed in touch via a show called Von Ferne sei herzlich gegrüßt, a programme that embodied the concept of saying hello from a long way away.
They recorded a voice message addressed to the people back home, and they were telling something about their everyday life, from where they live, what they're doing, why they are there, and also how they keep Swiss traditions where they live. And then it was somehow sent to Bern, to the studio of Swiss Radio International. Then it was rebroadcasted back all over the world. So it was kind of a way to unify the Swiss people who live like all over the world.
Paul Grossenbacher sent his greetings in 1972 from New Glarus in America.
My name is Paul Grossenbacher, and I would like to send you fellow Swiss greetings from New Glarus, the little Switzerland in America. New Glarus is a pretty village south of Wisconsin with around 1,500 residents. You can hear Swiss German on the street or in the workplace, but with the younger residents, it has slowly become extinct.
In the same programme, the Swiss sent messages describing their life and where they lived in countries such as Ethiopia, Australia, Bangladesh, Hawaii, Japan and North Korea. Showing that Switzerland was strong, independent and united was important. But the idea of Swissness in a wider sense, what it meant to be Swiss or to truly experience Switzerland, was also central to the programmes and the music that the station put out across the globe. The International Service wanted to show Switzerland's best side to the world. In 1975, reporter Chris Dixon from the English department embarked on a hair-raising adventure for the programme Don't Just Stay Here, Do Something.
Now, the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation invites you to Don't Just Stay Here. Do something.
So, off we go. A quick look at the watch. It's 31 minutes past one on a very fine and bright sunny February afternoon, and we are bobsledding from Breda to Bergoon, 5 kilometres. Welcome aboard. Way! And that was the first fall, straight into the boards on the first bend.
And that was Keith Cooper at the start of the 5 kilometre Breda to Bergoon sled run in Graubünden, eastern Switzerland. Anyone can go on the run, which is down the Albula Pass road. The pass is closed to traffic in winter. All you have to do is take the train up from Bergoon to Breda, hire a sledge quite cheaply, or bring your own, and you're off.
Music also played a large role. From the folk songs and yodeling that brought tears to the eyes of listeners, according to numerous letters, to the compilation vinyls that were sent out to radio stations in different countries. The BBC, student radios, hospital radios and many others either played these songs on the records or played entire programmes from Swiss Radio International that contained Swiss music. Famous musicians were also interviewed for the international audience.
SBC presents the best in jazz throughout the world.
Your jazz panorama.
Louis Armstrong visited Switzerland in 1955 and was interviewed by journalist Lance Channon.
Louis, today we're not going to talk about your career and your music in particular, because that is by now so well known to everybody. You're an international figure. But I would like to talk to you about music as an international language. Have you noticed that European audiences are different in any way from American audiences when it comes to listening and responding to your music?
Well, not where I'm concerned. Where I'm concerned, take a classical musician.
Yes.
Feel the same as a classical musician would feel in New York.
Right.
Toward me. We have our language. I mean, just like you take fighters. I mean, they get somewhere and talk about knockout blows and different things like that.
Yes.
I go different towns, and in a town that I go in, Egypt or Africa or Europe, or everywhere it is, mm-hmm. New Orleans, mm-hmm. It's the same.
You've been listening to the Swiss Info Programme. Thanks this week go to our archive team and our technician, Jakob Stoller. I'm Joe Faye.